You should have.
House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is May 7th, 2015. First item on the agenda is Senate Bill 170. Our first item we're going to open a public hearing on is Senate Bill 175. Senator Boquist and Representative Helm, please.
Okay. It's appropriate to sit to my left. For the record, I am Brian Boquist, Senate District 12. I want to talk first briefly, if you would, Mr. Chair and committee members, on the origination of SB 175. I think several members of you will recall several years ago, I drew the short straw, had absolutely nothing to do on one afternoon, and I got the short straw to convene a work group to try and come up with the basis of what is now 175. That came out of a rather large work group. I think at one point the Representative Krieger, Mr. Chair, looked at me in that and thought I was nuts, but that's okay. There are many people in my district that are saying the same thing. We did come to a consensus of that, and then just for better word, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, nobody paid attention to the sunset, and it actually sunsetted before we got to reauthorize the law and go forward. I understand that there was a similar bill to this that was in your chamber that didn't make it out of the original House deadline that had a whole bunch of other stuff in it across the board. And I also understand that there is some concern about smuggling of bear parts, Chinese bear parts, or getting rich or whatever it is along that line, which may be an amendment. I am fine if that is turns out to be a piece of legislation that keeps everything clean and straightforward. I think there's some concerns about the 1 through 6 or whatever the parts and pieces are out there. I'm really here as the expert on the original bill that came out. And, of course, I obviously don't like bears to be poached because there's no bears left for me to hunt in my northeastern ranch because somebody already hunted them out. And I have heard recently I think they all ended up in a freezer in LeGrand or Baker City. So I now know where they went to. I also don't have any coyotes, Mr. Chair, because the wolves ate all those, too. And if you could do something about that, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Helm, representative for House District 34. There's two parts of my testimony today. The first part is I want you to know that I am 100% in favor of the base bill with reviving the language that was sunsetted earlier this year. We all want that bill to come out of your committee and be passed into law. And so if any of my amendments, proposed amendments today, if you feel like that threatens the viability of the bill, then you shouldn't adopt my amendments and you should please pass forward the bill as Senator Boquist described it. Let me just go quickly through the amendments, and I'm going to use the dash sixes because that amendment rolls up the other five amendments that I'm requesting to Senate Bill 175. And I don't know if you have that dash six in front of you or not. Amendment dash six at lines 14 through, and I need my glasses, unfortunately, 22 represents the dash one amendments. That essentially there is a proposal to up the restitution amount for black bears from $1,000 as it currently is to $5,000. That's an amount that in the work group we agreed on. I know restitution amounts sometimes give folks some heartburn, and if it does give you heartburn on the committee, that's the one piece of it's the one amendment that I would retract immediately, mostly in favor of preserving the other elements that I want to talk about next. I think it's valuable to have a higher restitution amount because we really need to send a message to these people out there that are systematic. This is organized crime. These folks are systematically poaching black bears, taking their gallbladders, sex parts, their paws, and their ears, and selling them into the Asian medical market. And those bears are ours. you know, we can take responsibility for managing them, but they're part of our natural heritage. They're part of our game management plans. They're part of our sporting industry. And I want to send a strong message to the bad guys out there that this is going to cost you. And, more importantly, that each time you poach a bear and you cut it up into parts illegally, each one of those parts is a separate take, and each one of those is going to cost you $5,000. That's what I'd like. I want to put them out of business. On page 3 of the dash 6s is at line 7 through 9 is the dash 2 amendment. Each part that has been removed from the carcass of a black bear when it is illegal to remove that part shall constitute a separate unlawful taking or killing of the bear. And I just talked about that. That's one of the most important parts of the amendments.
Good question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Helm, do you know what the market is for parts? Is $5,000 a high enough fee in order to for somebody not to take the chance because they can sell it for more on the black market?
Representative Williamson, Mr. Chair, it's a great question. Our research indicates that in the cases that they have caught folks, it seems to constitute a range of between $3,000 and $10,000. It depends on where these gallbladders are headed. So yes, right now it seems that the $1,000 restitution amount is kind of a slap on the wrist and a cost of doing business. But once you start stacking these penalties on top of each other for the taking and parting of one animal, I think we get to where we want to be real quick. Again, on page 3 of the dash 6, at 17, line 17 through 19 is a really important provision for this whole section of the wildlife laws, and it represents the dash 5 amendments. Subject to ORS 496690, this section does not apply to the unintentional taking or killing of wildlife incident to an otherwise lawful activity. I think Representative Barker and Representative Krieger both have stories like this of hunters that have obtained their license, they're out during the season acting completely legally, and they have maybe shot at an animal, and right behind that animal is another that is not legal to be taken. Or they've shot at a bear, thought they hit it, the bear runs off, then they go and look for that bear. They see a bear, they think that they've just shot the first time, they shoot that bear, and all of a sudden they've got two bears there, that, and one of them is an illegal take. Those situations are abundant when you talk to our OSP Fish and Wildlife folks. So this provision would insulate folks that are trying to do the right thing because they've accidentally taken an animal. And the OSP officers will tell you that there are tons of illegal takes every season. You know, you can mistakenly take a coho salmon during, or a Chinook salmon, rather, during coho season. It's easy to make a mistake. That's an illegal take, even though it was unintentional. And we don't want it to have these folks that made an honest mistake get tagged with a big restitution amount. That's the safety valve for that kind of situation. Then, again, on page 3, lines 24 through 28, those are the dash 3 amendments. This creates some help for the DAs. So when OSP finds these parted out animals and records that and gets the case to the DA can take that information and it creates a rebuttable presumption as the DA is prosecuting that case that the person intended to traffic these parts in the international market, which is what we are trying to discourage. And with that, I'll take you back to page 1 and describe the dash 4 amendments that are at lines 3 through 6. This particular provision will be inserted into existing law, which addresses repeat offenders, essentially, and allows the DA and the judges to go after higher penalties and restitutions for folks that are second-time offenders. So we wanted to add in there, when folks are caught trafficking in wildlife, black bears, for example, that they're treated immediately like a second-time offender because the intent's already been established. We don't have to wait until they illegally poach twice to understand that they've been intentionally trafficking in wildlife parts because we've got those other provisions in the law that establish intent. So it's my preference that you adopt the Dash 6 amendments as they make a nice package. But if for some reason any one of those individual amendments, 1 through 5, that is the roll-up, give you heartburn, I'd encourage you to pick them out and let each one of these pieces that I've described is a good piece of policy that strengthens the wildlife law and gets to our purpose, which is to try to protect these black bears. Thank you very much.
Any questions for Representative Post?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Representative Boakwitz. So I think you said you only wanted to talk about the original?
Mr. Chair, Representative Post, I'm smart enough because I was in the first work group. I can answer, I think, just about any questions of 1 through 6 amendments because I wrote them down as I went along. If you'd like to throw me a bone.
Easy one. How are you good with this?
For the lawyer that's actually several lawyers are sitting here, you have 1 through 6 that's here. 6 is the combined. Going in backwards, I think unintentional taking is something that has to be addressed. I don't know about the exact verbiage. I believe Representative Krieger and both the Chair Barker would know if that's the right wording. Repeat offenders, you know, that's the same thing we did in the other bill. If you get the first one through the unintentional taking, you know, that's the first strike in the ball game. The second time around, they're probably guilty as crap, so therefore you go after them. Information for district attorneys, I suppose, if it's a second offense, and I think that's what I heard, is you want to be able to do that. You prosecutor lawyers know more than I do. Separate parts, I guess these things are worth $20,000 a piece. It's kind of like feathers and birds that we had in our work group. That makes sense. The only piece that that I raise an eyebrow with is the restitution piece, and this is why, Representative Post, the restitution piece means you need to get into a courtroom. This is the problem that we have. I live across the river in Polk County. It's, as you well know, it's well known that we have 2 sheriff's deputies out there, and they work a 5-day shift, about 10 hours a day with their overtime, and you just kind of get the roulette wheel of when you can violate the law and when you can't. What most people don't know is we only have just 2 district attorneys, too, prosecuting, which means you're never going to get into the courtroom to get restitution because he can't take one of these cases. And if you transpose that, I'm trying to look across well to Representative Krieger's district as example, and even portions of your district, too, and Representative Springer's district, you'll never get into the courtroom to get the restitution. You just won't get there because the DA doesn't have the money to prosecute to chase them down. And so that may or may not, I don't know how this is written, may or may not be a good thing, because if that's part of it and that DA has to make that assumption, what we did in the original base bill, I think as most members were here last time, is we wanted to make sure that a game warden could cite them right on the spot, that it was a violation for their first strike, that they paid the ticket, got educated the first time around, and if they were stupid enough to do it the second time, pardon my French, we went after them. And that's the problem. If the restitution is in the first part, you're never going to get into the courtroom because we have no money in rural Oregon.
Would you or Representative Krieger wish to address that at all? Just for my...
Go ahead, Representative Krieger.
Maybe a little more comprehensive thing. When we did 175, was it 11?
Yeah, 11.
God, that goes by.
Rolled.
We had there was a sunset on it, and we were supposed to be able to check back with the state police to see how effective it had been and had these increased penalties. Well, guess what? There was no tracking, so we really don't know how many people were arrested that would have fallen underneath the new regulations. Because if you look on page 2 of the original bill, if the person has 2 or more previous class convictions for a Class A misdemeanor, there were enhanced penalties, fan grease, sturgeon. And then, and I'm not certain we're going here, because if you look at line 14, unlawful taking of wildlife, they intend to sell, barter, trade, import, or export. That's what they're doing with these bears. The court today has the authority to do exactly what he's trying to do in the Dash 6s. The question is, can you get restitution? And the other part is, are we going to get convictions? Are we going to get prosecutions? I talked to Judge Supreme Court Justice Ballmer. He is making arrangements for Stan Steele to have a half an hour to address the judges' conference, where they're all going to be in October, about the value of making sure the penalties are imposed with discretion depending on the seriousness of the crime, which I think is a great step forward. Talked to Hackerode today from the DA. He's going to have Stan Steele with the District Attorneys Association talking about ORS 496-630, where it says the district attorney shall prosecute every case in which there appears to be a violation. Some of them are or not. So how does the district attorney not do what the statute tells him to do? But on the next page, he does what the statute tells him to do by prosecuting this person. So there's going to be some conversations. I think we're going to get more prosecutions. I think we're going to get better judgments from the judges. And I think I'd like to start there. I did offer to Representative Helm to meet with him between now and next session. And I wanted to have Oregon Hunters, Steelheaders, Joe Rowletter, who is a Commodity Commission of Commercial Fish, get together. What is it that we're experiencing that really needs greater penalties if they're not imposed? Don't do a whole lot. It's whether or not you can get people there to the table with the judge and get them imposed. And I think we're on the right track to do that. If someone has, in the case like he says, 40 different parts of 40 different bears, the state police can charge them for you know, every bear has a gallbladder. They don't have three or four. They all have 4 feet. They don't have 6 feet, 7 feet. So you can tell how many they were killed. They can file individual cases on every one of them. And the judge can appropriately look at that and say, hey, you killed six bears. And then he can look at the $6,250 and a year in jail on every one of those. He can also seize anything used in the violation, gun, vehicle, traps, whatever it might be. So simply making huge penalties does not, in the long run, I think, help us a whole lot.
Right, then follow up. Again, Representative Kringer, if this the Senate Bill 924 sunsetted January 2015, I get what you're saying, but if we wait until January of next year, February next year.
The bill as it is, just by itself,
gets the sunset the base off, bill.
And we're back okay. Into what was there.
That's what
I got no problem with that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I could clarify one thing. What I want to make sure that the committee doesn't think is that the page 3 provision of the dash 2 amendments that deals with the multiple parts is redundant of the section that Representative Krieger identified. In the base bill, the unlawful taking with the intent to sell language falls under the criminal penalties that would be imposed by the state police. In my amendments, that similar language applies to the civil penalties or the restitution amounts. So similar language intended for a slightly different purpose. I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you. Any more questions? Thank you. And I'm going to temporarily close this hearing and open a hearing on Senate Bill 4 and call President Courtney. President Courtney, if you could, well, have you, I know you have to get out, so.
So, did you just, do I speak now? So I'm Peter Courtney, and I'm a state senator in District 11, which includes portions of Salem on up through Brooks, Jervis, and Woodburn. Chair Barker, Vice Chair Olson, Vice Chair Williamson, members of the House Judiciary Committee, thank you for allowing me to testify today in support of Senate Bill 6, which in effect, Senate Bill 4, which in effect amends or adjust Senate Bill 6, which was passed last session, and it attempts to clarify that an animal rescue operation entity has legal custody of animals that they locate off-site. I'm very proud of what we did last session when we passed Senate Bill 6. It protected animals by cracking down on fraudulent animal rescue organizations. It actually went well beyond that. It was a massive animal abuse piece of legislation, but that is specifically why it was introduced, and it did a very good job of that. Last year, it was brought to my attention that this bill that we passed in the last session had a loophole, and the loophole was very serious. The one that the animal abuser could use to skirt the law that we did pass. So the loophole, in effect, blew a hole in that law. By fostering animals off-site, these less than reputable animal rescue operations could deny any responsibility for what happened to those animals off-site, that is, off-site from where their major operation was. They would not be responsible for abuse or neglect of animals they placed in foster homes. Senate Bill 4 simply adds a legal responsibility for all animals in a rescuer's operation and care, even though they house those animals off-site. So there's a litany and legion of individuals who will be here today to testify for the bill, in particular Janet Carlson, the Marin County Commissioner, well known to many legislators since she formerly served in the House. She was the individual that brought to my attention this loophole, and she will, of course, bring with her managers and directors of the different animal shelters and animal protection agencies in the greater Mid-Valley, with Willamette Valley, to testify in support of this legislation, who worked tirelessly with members of my staff, particularly Honor Brown, and Legislative Council, to put together this piece of legislation to make sure that we close this loophole so that we could send a strong message to individuals that would choose to do this kind of thing off-site with animals, that no longer could they escape responsibility. So that's the legislation in a nutshell, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions for President Courtney? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll close the hearing on 4 for the time being and reopen Senate Bill 175. Call Al Elkins, Michael Salvaggio, and David Cracky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Hunters Association. I'd like to speak to Senate Bill 175. We are in support of this bill. This bill comes to you to undo a sunset that was put on Senate Bill 924 in 2011. And we were a part and proud to be part of a work group that included, obviously, hunters, the Audubon Society, fishing interests, just about every group that you can think of. And we were proud of the work that we did in 2011, and we still are, and would hope that you would pass this bill, since it just basically reinstitutes 924 without the sunset clause. That concludes my testimony. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Please. Thank you. I'm David Cracky. I'm with an organization called Wild Aid. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify today in support of the Dash 6 amendments. I've been part of the work group of House Bill 2537, which ultimately this language came out of. First, I'd like to address the $5,000 amount. It seems to me that based on the other dollar amounts that we currently have in there for other species, that the $5,000 is a very modest increase, not a huge increase. It actually puts the bear still well below a number of other takings for other animals. The real heart of this matter, however, is what is with regard to the trafficking issues, and that's what I hope will be appreciated here, that the additional amendments are really addressing those people who are out there part of these criminal syndicates poaching on a large scale, and doing so for a significant profit when they finally sell the parts overseas. In fact, in March 22nd of this year, a man out of Eugene was cited trying to board a plane with bear paws, bear gall bladders, and the like. This is happening. We had a similar situation up in Walla Walla, Washington back in 2013, where the same type of thing was happening. And that's what we are addressing here, and we certainly hope that you will keep the Dash 6 amendments in. They've been we worked hard to get them there. They are also, with regard to the judicial and the DA involvement, I'd like to have them, I think it would be appropriate to have them on the books just in the event that there is something that shakes out or some other mechanism that allows the DAs to enforce these provisions. Thank you.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, for the record, Michael Salvaggio here representing the Audubon Society of Portland. The society and its 15,000 members appreciate the work that's been done on this bill. There's been a lot of good cooperation among many different stakeholders. The bill has not yet received a negative vote, I believe. And since Senate Bill 924 was put into its being engrossed version back in 2011, it had not received a negative vote. So I think this exhibits a lot of good cooperation among a lot of different interests. We're here strongly supporting 175. I don't want to rehash everything that's been mentioned, but we do believe that it's a critical step forward in fighting poaching, stepping up for wildlife conservation. I want to also make clear that we're comfortable with the Dash 6 amendments. We're comfortable with the Dash 2 amendments or any combination thereof. To be absolutely clear, if the committee so decides to tack on a set of amendments and move this bill forward, we'll be thrilled about that. However, we would not ask this committee to take any action that would impede the passage of Senate Bill 175 as is. That is our primary concern and objective at this point, and we look forward to working with this committee and other stakeholders in the future.
Thank you. Any questions from this panel? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Al, for you, I didn't hear, or I'd like to hear your thoughts on the amendments.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Springer, we were part of the work group as well, and I want to thank Representative Helm for bringing us all together. He did a great job. We had every interest you could think of there. From folks at Audubon Society to fish folks. And I think the original amendments that came out of there were six pages, maybe. This is just a small black bear portion of them. As a OHA, were supportive of the increasing to 5,000 and also supportive of the on page 3 of the 6's dash 17, line 17, that's our language with the Oregon Outdoor Council that has to do with the unintentional taking or killing of wildlife. As far as line 24 through 27 on the page 3, I'm not real clear exactly what that does. It's been explained to me probably more times than I care to think about. But I've never really taken this before our group and asked them specifically about that language. So we're okay with the language up to that point. And I don't think that the additional language harms anything personally, but I certainly couldn't explain it as well as the people to my immediate right could. So that's where we are.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you very much. Thank you. Tom Wolf and Scott Beckstead.
Chair Barker, committee members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolf, the executive director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited. I'm here representing our 2,800 members who are concerned about the illegal taking of fish and wildlife in the state of Oregon. We were involved with the original SB 924 work group 4 years ago. We were involved with Representative Helms' work group on HB 2537. We are one of the fish groups referred to by others that have been heavily involved with this, along with steelheaders. We support the Dash 6 amendments, but we also feel, as many others have stated, that if the Dash 6 amendments threatens this bill, the original bill going forward, then we would be fine with the committee just passing the original SB 175 and having Representative Helm work with Representative Krieger in the future about doing something about his concerns. One thing I would mention is in the original HB 2537, there was language that would concern the illegal taking of sturgeon eggs that didn't make it into any of these amendments on this bill. And I'm not suggesting that they do it, but I would suggest that maybe in the future, if we're looking at this sort of things, that this concept be added to any future bill, because there is several examples by the OSP of rings of people that are illegally harvesting large sturgeon and harvesting their eggs to sell as caviar on the black market. And this is a major cause in the white sturgeon population below Bonneville, that used to be the largest in the world and now is suffering from decline due to many causes, but certainly poaching is one of them. With that, I'll conclude my statement. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, my name's Joe Rollator. I'm here today because my business partner, Stan Steele, who normally represents on these things, had a medical emergency in his family. As other people have stated, we've all, a number of us sports, fishing, and hunting and conservation folks have worked very hard to get 175 repassed and passed in the first time. And the Oregon Outdoor Council and the McKenzie River Guides support 175 as written. Additionally, myself and Stan both served on the restitutions work group that Representative Helms convened. And I tried to figure out from my notes what we had agreed to and what we hadn't, and I can't do that. But I am committed to working into the future to come up with a package of reasonable restitutions that the Fish and Game Commission can sue to recover, because all of us in Oregon are harmed or we're stolen from when somebody takes illegal game. And in addition to the criminal violations, we'd like to see restitutions pursued. And I could just point out that a big game sheep tag that's sold at Safari Club International can sell for up to over $100,000. So these animals are very valuable, and restitution is an important piece of the puzzle. But I don't know where we're at with this right now, so I can't support the amendments as written. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. For the record, Scott Beckstead with the Humane Society of the United States, here in strong support of Senate Bill 175. Like Tom, we like the Dash 6 amendments, and a big part of the reason why is there was really a remarkable collaborative effort by groups, a very diverse assortment of groups, to work on these amendments. Like Tom, I would only be supportive of those amendments if they do not jeopardize the underlying Senate Bill 175. The Humane Society of the United States considers poaching to be a serious animal welfare problem, and we are especially troubled by the effects of poaching on the black bear population in Oregon. And so for that reason, we really like the Senate bill, or the Dash 6 amendments to the bill, because it especially addresses the trafficking in black bear parts. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mr. Beckstead? Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Krieger, would like your input on this one?
Well, you know, I've had conversations. You must remember that 2537 was before the Natural Resource Committee, and there was not the will to pass it out there for a whole host of reasons. I have offered to Representative Helm to get together with him and look at what I think might be more appropriate. I'm still willing to do that, and I do think we should have some feedback, I hope, from the judges and the DAs, and I think you're going to get, on the criminal side, I think you're going to get a better dispositions of cases. When you talk about the civil side, whether or not a judge imposes it or the department sues for the value of the animal, if the department starts doing it, they're going to have to hire somebody full-time to do it because they don't have staff to go around doing that now.
Thank you, Representative Freeland.
Mr. Chair, it seems to me we've had a lot of work groups on this bill in its current form. It seems to me I certainly support the bill amended with the Dash 6 amendments. I think it would be time we wired that down.
Okay. Any other? Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Certainly, I like the base bill and wholeheartedly support that and appreciate the work that has gone into that. I am not opposed to the amendments because of what they do. I'm concerned that the amendments don't get us where we really need to be in a practical sense, especially when I think about where a lot of hunting, I don't know that I can say the majority, but a lot of our hunting occurs is in smaller areas, rural areas that have less resources for prosecution. And so I don't know that the amendments get us where I think we all want to be. I don't know that I can support them at this time. I would love to see the work go into it to get us to a really good product that's going to work across the state, given the larger counties and the small counties that have maybe one cop and a part-time DA.
Other discussion? I hear the concern about all the amendments. The Dash 2 amendments take care of the bear, which seems to be the major problem right now, or would help with the bear.
The Dash 2 is the $5,000?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, there's no exception in there for the incidental take. I don't know if one of you wanted to address that or not.
Sure, come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Krieger. Let me see if I can sort this out.
So we don't have the unintentional taking line in that
Tuesday.
Not in the twos.
Not in the twos. Yeah. If you wanted to go that route and you wanted to, get that language taken care of, you'd adopt the Dash 5 amendments. And that's all that amendment addresses, is the unintentional taking or killing of wildlife incident to an otherwise lawful activity. And then I thought I heard, did I hear interest in the Dash 2 amendments?
Yeah.
That language is that, which I think also by itself would help, says that each part that has been removed from the carcass of a black bear when it is illegal to remove the part shall constitute a separate unlawful taking or killing of the black bear. And again, that would apply to the restitution amounts. It would stack those, which again, in our estimation, would provide some deterrent effect.
So, Representative Krieger, the 2 and the 5 would take care of your concern then?
Well, we've got all these here again. We've got all these different amendments. No one sat down and looked at them. I haven't talked to them as a group or of individuals with the different people. I'm not going to support the bill. I'll support the bill, but no amendments at all until we've had it worked out. This has been going on in that committee, and I'm getting a little bit, you know, it's been going on for, 4 months? He's been in my office. Other people have been in my office. We've made an honest effort to address this issue, and they may not be getting what they want today. I'm not in a hurry for today. I want to get it right, and I don't think we're going to get it right with if we start amending this bill with a bunch of pieces.
Okay, I think I will not move the bill today. We'll take a couple days to look at it, and I have full intention of moving the base bill, if nothing else.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Close the hearing on Senate Bill 175. Reopen the hearing on Senate Bill 4. Tamara, Bruce, and Sonia, please.
Represent Barker, Chair Barker, and members of the committee. I'm Janet Carlson, Marion County Commissioner. I got here right at 3 o'clock and signed up, and you may not have got the note that I added myself to the sheet. First of all, I would like to very much thank the committee for hearing this bill and thank Senator Courtney, and he mentioned Anna Braun for their work on the bill on behalf of Marion County. As you heard, Senate Bill 6 passed in 2013. It had a lot of different parts to it, but part of it was in response to an incident that happened in North Marion County where there were a number of animals that were caged that were in a barn and malnourished, and our sheriff's office couldn't legally get on the property, and so there was an attempt through this bill to come up with a solution so that law enforcement could respond if a situation like this were to happen again. And so the portion of Senate Bill 6 that Marion County got was the animal rescue entity portion, and the counties were put in the position of implementing that section. So Marion County has a very adept legal counsel and has very caring and skilled dog shelter staff, and Tammy Getch here is from the director of the Community Services Department that oversees the dog shelter. They came to the board, and we pass ordinances when these things come to us from the legislature on how to implement. And there were a number of questions about what was the intent of the legislation, and we hadn't really followed the legislation during the session. So what kinds of forms needed to be filled out? How do you identify these animal rescue entities? How do you keep the fee low enough so that it covers the cost and at the same time makes people want to participate in the program? And so there were a number of questions that I approached Senator Courtney's office about. His staff, Anna, pulled together the advocates that had been involved in putting together the original bill. And one of the things that we did agree on, as we all learned from each other about the bill, was that it needed a technical fix. And that technical fix is what you see in Senate Bill 4. It amends the definition of animal rescue entity. So the animal rescue entity definition includes several facets. One is that you have to have 10 or more animals. And then it talks about that those animals then need to be photographed, there needs to be descriptions, and a number of other things. As this came forward, the fostering entities, that these are entities that would then put animals in foster care, was a big question for us, because they might have 10 or more animals, but those animals would be in separate homes, and the parent organization might even be in another county. Perhaps the parent organization would be in Clackamas County, and yet there might be an animal placed in Woodburn or Donald or Aurora in North Marion County. And so the question was, does each individual foster home then count as an animal rescue entity and only have one or two animals, less than 10, so they're not part of the program? If they do count, do we have to, who oversees it, which county, who supervises, who inspects, who do they send the pictures to? And so this was a piece that we felt like we really needed to clarify in the legislation. If it were physical custody, then it would be the situation I just described. But if it were legal custody, then it would be all of the animals that fostering entity would be over. And it would be the county then the parent organization resides in that would be responsible for overseeing the program. So we wouldn't need to worry in that instance that I described. Clackamas County would handle that situation, and they would be responsible for all the animals of the parent. And the same with Marion County. If we had animals placed in Linn County or elsewhere, we would handle that program. So the bill does describe then the custody as being legal custody, we just ask for your support, and I'll allow Tammy and Sonia and Bruce to introduce themselves, and they're really just here to answer any questions that you might have.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker and committee members. My name is Tamara Getch. I'm the director of Marion County's Community Services, which is over the Community Services Department.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am Sonia Pulvers, and I am one of the managers out at the Marion County Dog Shelter and for the Marion County Dog Services Program.
Mr. Chair, representatives, for the record, Bruce Armstrong, Senior Assistant Legal Counsel with Marion County. And as we noted, we're here to answer any questions you might have.
Anybody have any questions on this one? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, members of the committee. For the record, my name is George O'Coolidge, here on behalf of the Oregon Humane Society. Established in 1868, the Oregon Humane Society is the state's largest and oldest animal welfare organization with about 50,000 supporters statewide. We're not affiliated with any other state or national agency or local or organization, and we're here today to ask for your support of Senate Bill 4. You heard testimony before about Senator Courtney's office pulling together a work group to address some of the loophole concerns in Senate Bill 6. We were one of the organizations that was asked to participate in that work group. As animal shelters across the country look for ways to reduce pet overpopulation and find homes for adoptable animals, more and more agencies are turning to independent rescue groups to provide alternatives to euthanasia of an otherwise happy or healthy puppy or dog. We know that many municipal counties' animal control agencies are underfunded and also look to find ways to foster animals to rescue care organizations as well. And as a result, there's been sort of a very, I would say, you know, robust sort of communication sort of partnerships that have sort of formed around the state. And while we like to believe, and we do believe, that most of these animals are being transferred between reputable organizations, reputable animal rescue groups, not all situations turn out for the best. And just like the elderly, kids, what we've seen is that animals are often vulnerable to abuse and neglect and other things. And this actually really came in to fruition sort of, I think Commissioner Carlson mentioned, you know, back in 2013, where the Oregon Humane Society was actually asked by the local sheriff to engage in a situation where over 1,000 rescued dogs were found languishing in a warehouse in Brooks, Oregon. They were emancipated, suffered from disease. It was a pretty rough situation. And for those who don't know, the Oregon Humane Society is unique in a number of ways, but one of which is we do employ a number of humane agents that are commissioned by the governor of the state of Oregon. We're actually in the process of transferring those commissions to the Oregon State Police office, and these commissioned officers basically assist local law enforcement counties when they're dealing with an animal abuse situation, and we do that at zero cost to the county or to the local municipality. That sort of case basically led to what was Senate Bill 6, you know, and is now ORS 609-415, which allows for licensing and inspection of all animal rescue entities housing more than 10 dogs. But again, as you've heard, there was a loophole when these animals are separated to multiple homes. And so Senate Bill 4 just clarifies the original intent of the law to apply to rescue groups that house their animals in multiple facilities that can often cross municipal lines or county lines. So, again, I think while the lion's share of animal rescues are responsible individuals and work tirelessly to save animals across the state, we do know that there are some bad actors, and we have been, you know, working to go after those and prosecute those bad actors. And we think that this, again, Senate Bill 4 closes that loophole. for unintended consequences. So we'd ask you to support the bill and move it forward.
Hey, thank you. Any questions for George? Thank you, George. Sure. This public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 4.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 4 to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Representative Williams moves Senate Bill 4 to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Greenlick, would you like to carry this bill?
Sure.
Okay. Representative Greenlick will be a carrier. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 236.
Yes, Chair Barker, members of the committee, Senate Bill 236 comes to us from the Office of the Governor on behalf of Oregon State Police. We have no revenue impact and no fiscal impact on this bill. It passed, it unanimously passed the Senate Judiciary Committee, and it passed the Senate floor with 29 yay votes and one excused. We don't have any amendments before us today either. So currently under Oregon law, the director of the Oregon Department of Administrative Services possesses authority to carry out the provisions of the public contracting code. So DAS serves as the enterprise-wide purchasing authority for the state of Oregon. Senate Bill 236 additionally authorizes the Department of State Police to enter into lease agreements and take title to real property as the superintendent of state police considers necessary for the performance of duties of the Department of State Police and the Oregon State Police. The bill is ready to move today.
Okay, and we have nobody signed up to testify. Are there any? Is there any discussion about that bill?
I'll just say that it will make public safety ways and means a lot easier around facilities with state police.
Honestly, I have always wondered why the state police did not own their own buildings, their facilities over the years. I mean, it just did not make sense to me to always be in lease agreements. And
some of those lease agreements were really costly.
Exactly, because I remember expensive. Being involved in several of them. So. This really does make sense.
Major Moines isn't still here.
I could give him a call if that's what you want.
No, I don't. Okay. Move to a work session on Senate Bill 236.
Chair, I move Senate Bill 236 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves Senate Bill 236 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Olson, would you carry that for us, please? Open a public hearing on House Bill 368A.
Yes, Chair Barker, members of the committee, Senate Bill 368A comes to us at the request of the Senate Interim Committee on Judiciary for Oregon State Bar's debtor-creditor section. We have no revenue impact and no fiscal impact on this bill. It passed both the Senate Judiciary Committee and the Senate floor unanimously. We did amend the bill in the previous chamber just to provide clarifying language to distinguish between in rem and real property. This is a really technical bill. Luckily, we have some experts here today. So historically in Oregon, courts and sheriffs have not had difficulty enforcing non-recourse mortgages. Judgment statutes, however, underwent revisions between 2003 and 2007, and there were some unintended consequences in that problems emerged when state courts kind of misinterpreted the statutes and include entry of a money judgment, money award in judicial foreclosure cases. This is problematic because monetary judgments for the discharged obligations are in violation of the discharge injunction, inappropriate when the property being foreclosed is secured by a residential deed of trust as defined by statute, as those cannot result in a money judgment by statute, and they are problematic as they improperly cloud title of unrelated real property and adversely impact credit reports. Senate Bill 368A, then, eliminates the need to include a monetary judgment in a foreclosure action when such inclusion is inappropriate or contrary to law. In such cases, Senate Bill 368A instead requires a declaration of the amount of debt that a lien secures and allows for a monetary award when a plaintiff requests it in a complaint. The bill also outlines how and when a judgment creditor that requested a writ of execution may bid on property to be sold. It mandates that if a judgment creditor submits a written bid prior to sale, it may not be for more than the full amount owing on the money award if a money award was included in the judgment, and it must also not be more than the amount declared in a non-monetary judgment. The bill also distinguishes between in rem and real property and specifies when a judgment creditor must make payment to the sheriff. And finally, it requires the sheriff to deliver proceeds of an execution sale to the court administrator. The bill is ready to move. And I'm sure you will be.
Gary?
I definitely don't want to carry this.
Barton's going to carry it.
This is the most technical bill I've handled this session.
A good one for Barton. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
I'll carry it. Not even here. I mean, give the guy a chance.
Why?
Oh, no. Uh-huh. Don't be nice.
No.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, members of the committee. My name is Gary Blackledge. I'm an attorney with the Portland firm of Green and Markley, and I'm here on behalf of the debtor-creditor section of the Oregon State Bar in support of Senate Bill 368. I might add that the executive committees of both the debtor-creditor section and the consumer law section of the Oregon State Bar support this bill and urge its passage, and we've also passed it by the Oregon State Sheriff's Association's legislation committee, and they also approve it. As was mentioned several sessions ago, in response to the foreclosure crisis, the legislature made some amendments to the Oregon Trust Deed Act, which caused lenders to prefer to foreclose judicially rather than non-judicially. In a non-judicial trust deed foreclosure, there isn't a judgment or any money award. The goal is just to foreclose the property, and all the lender gets is the property. In a judicial foreclosure, in certain circumstances, the lender can obtain a money award in the judgment on the note that is secured by the trust deed. And that money award, in certain circumstances, if the sale of the property isn't sufficient to satisfy the debt, leaves a deficiency. And that money award deficiency judgment remains out there after the foreclosure against the borrower. Well, of course, we understand that in a residential trust deed, you can't enforce a deficiency of judgment after the foreclosure. Nevertheless, the way the statute, ORS 88.010 sub 1, has been interpreted by some circuit court judges is that you have to have a money award against a person, the maker of the note or somebody else liable for the debt, in order to foreclose. This means that, and not all judges have interpreted it this way, there's a sort of a mix of varying degrees around the state. But this means that in many cases, you have to have money award in the judgment where you're not really intending to enforce it against the borrower. All you need is the property. So there's a number of situations where this is inappropriate. As was mentioned, in this situation where the borrower has filed a bankruptcy and is either pending in the bankruptcy or has received a discharge in the bankruptcy, and then the court is requiring the lender to get a money award, which is a violation of the discharge injunction. And this creates a problem. There's a problem if the borrowers are deceased. And typically when a borrower who has been foreclosed, they don't have many assets, so a lot of times the heirs don't file a probate when the borrower is deceased, and there's no person to have a money award entered against. Well, these judges are asserting that you have to have a money award against a person. This means the lender has to go and file a probate and appoint somebody as a PER just to serve them and have a money award against a probate estate that is otherwise insolvent. There's situations involving purchase money loans where no deficiency is allowed. There are situations where you have a foreclosure and the note is past the statute of limitations, but the trust deed that secures the note isn't, which is a 10-year period. So you could foreclose the property, but you can't really get a judgment on the note. And in those situations, you're having a money award entered after the statute of limitations on that note. There's other situations where a plaintiff might not want to have a money award against the client. One I can think of is in a workout situation where you're reaching a settlement and the borrower agrees, look, you can take my property, but don't enter a money award against me personally. And so they enter into a settlement agreement. Well, if the court's saying you have to have a money award, you have to, have difficulty getting the judgment entered because you have to have wordage that, oh, it's a money award, but it's non-recourse as to the judgment debtor, which doesn't make a lot of sense. To illustrate this, just this morning I got an email from one of the foreclosure attorneys that I call them foreclosure mills because they handle many foreclosures. And I was indicating to him that, you know, I think that the declaratory judgment declaring that the trust deed secures a debt and the property should be sold to satisfy the debt was the way that it should go in these situations. And he says to me, if I could just read this, he says, we have actually been doing the types of judgments that you are describing in several circuit courts, for example, Lane, Umatilla, and Marion, for quite a while. We call them amount due judgments. We have never been very comfortable with doing them since the authority is currently so thin. But the judges in those courts left us with few other options in cases where the debtor is either deceased or had a bankruptcy discharge entered. In Clackamas County, we have been entering what we call asterisk judgments in cases where the debt was discharged, basically stating that we are only taking a money award to comply with ORS 88.010 and do not actually intend to collect it in violation of the bankruptcy discharge. And then he says, with the Multnomah foreclosure panel, it has come to the point where we are completely out of options, short of petitioning to have a personal representative appointed in deceased debtor cases, which will likely end up costing our clients more than twice as much than the foreclosure itself. It is also a real problem for municipalities because many of these properties remain vacant or inhabited by squatters while we wrangle with judges about appointing a personal representative or finding some form of judgment that the courts will accept. So if there isn't a change, the courts are going to continue to be bogged down while judgments are rejected, while probates are being required, and then the money awards for deficiencies continue to cloud other properties owned by the borrower or adversely impact their credit reports. Senate Bill 368 will amend ORS 88.010 and several related statutes, including ORS 18.862 and 18.936, to eliminate the need for a money award in a foreclosure where it is inappropriate, contrary to other laws, or simply not elected by the plaintiff. These changes will not change the existing law where the plaintiff is entitled to pursue a money award against a borrower when one is included in the judgment. It simply authorizes the court to enter judgments of foreclosure where the plaintiff has not requested that type of relief and where the judgments do not contain money awards.
Well, let me ask you, so that the courts aren't objecting to this at all, are they? This just clarified for them.
Mr. It? Chair, it's my understanding that there is no objection at all. In fact, I think the courts welcome this change because at least there's a circuit court judge in Douglas County, Judge Garrison, who's written an opinion saying, hey, this is what the statute says, and this is what we're going to do. Right. And there's no two ways about it.
Anybody have any questions at all about this?
Yeah. I just completely glazed over.
I apologize.
No, that's okay. No, it's important information.
On behalf of the debtor creditors section, thank you.
It's not you, it's the bill.
Submission.
So, yeah. Well, thank you.
I'm happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Yeah, nobody had any, so thank you.
Thank you.
Close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 368.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 368A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves Senate Bill 368A to the floor with a due pass. Discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Williamson.
I don't know if you need to.
If we took a test on this, we'd all flunk.
Yeah. Oh, this is a fun deal.
Would be just like back in school. I got a withdrawal.
Suspend the rules. Would you like to vote on? Yes.
Good bill.
Yes. Good bill should pass. Open a.
I tried to wait.
Hearing on Senate Bill 378. Linda Siegert.
Good
Chairman Barker and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of the passage of Senate Bill 378. My name is Linda Siegert, and I'm a resident of Washington County and a former homeowner in Crook County. On November 9, 2012, Crook County Circuit Court Judge Gary Williams determined that dog breeders in residential neighborhoods are exempt from public nuisance law because they are, quote, a licensed business primarily intended to obtain a profit from the kenneling of dogs, unquote. He declared the current nuisance law to be ambiguous because, in his opinion, the verbs kenneling and breeding mean the same thing and must therefore be used interchangeably when applying the laws of statutory construction. Based on Judge Williams' ruling, dog breeders operating in residential communities are now free to allow their dogs to chase people on public and private property, damage and destroy the property of others, scatter garbage on public and private property, disturb people with frequent and prolonged noises, run at large while in heat, and endanger people on public or private property. I don't believe the legislature ever intended residential dog breeders to be exempt from the responsibilities of dog ownership. So I'm here today to request this committee to approve Senate Bill 378 so that it is unambiguous on this point. On the surface, this issue might seem trivial or unimportant. However, I can assure you that Judge Williams' interpretation of the current legislation, current law, has a profoundly negative effect on the lives of many good people who only wish to enjoy the peace and quiet of their homes. Please don't interpret this request as a crusade against dog breeders. On the contrary, I only wish to remove the current ambiguity so that all citizens, whether homeowners or dog breeders, are treated fairly and equally under Oregon's laws. I believe the legislature intends everyone to be responsible for their dogs, regardless of whether they're used for profit or enjoyed as companions. Senate Bill 378 will help to ensure that that intent is realized. Thank you for this opportunity, and I will be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Do you want to give us any additional information?
Chair Barker, members.
Bill Duke.
Yeah, Chair Barker, members of the committee. So basically what happened was with ORS 609.03533A, there was an ambiguous, two plausible interpretations of that statute. So basically, there's an exclusion there that applies to a business that is primarily intended to obtain a profit from the kenneling of dogs. And it really gets into then, if you are raising dogs for breeding purposes, but you're kenneling them, is the kenneling incidental to the breeding for profit, or are you kenneling and that is part of it? And that's what it came down to. So we did get a legislative council opinion on this bill from Dexter Johnson and totally agreed that there were plausibly two interpretations of this statute and that it could use some clarification. And so what this bill does in essence, it inserts the same definition for boarding kennel as found in other ORS sections, that being a facility provides care for a fee to dogs that stay at the facility an average of less than 30 days. It repeals the language then regarding licensed businesses and dogs kept primarily in kennels. And then it also clarifies the definition of keeper and adds an exception for boarding kennels. It clarifies that license fee exemptions apply to dogs that are considered inventory under another statute. So we've vetted this really well. It's clear there is an ambiguity there. So the bill's ready to move if you choose to do so.
Okay, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Open a work session on Senate Bill 378.
Ms. Chair, I move Senate Bill 378 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves Senate Bill 378 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Springer, would you like to carry this one for us?
I thought Barton was.
Oh, you thought Barton was?
I thought Barton was.
I don't want to step on his toes.
I don't mind. You can have this one.
Oh, thank you.
We'll get him back. This is a simple one. Any further business to come before the committee? We stand adjourned. Thank you, committee. Thank you, committee. We stand adjourned.